Welcome to the Space Show, Jim.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here. And I guess we would talk about some of the missions that would be possible with using a nuclear reactors for propulsion and energy sources. One of the most intriguing, I think, is the use of such sources to explore Europa. Evidence seems to indicate that there is a under ice ocean on Europa, and it's possible that it may even have life forms there, because there are certainly life forms that people knew nothing about on Earth for many years, which have been discovered at undersea volcanic vents and dependent on the energy sources from those vents. And there may be similar things on Europa. But to really explore Europa, it's first necessary to get there, which is requires a lot of propulsion energy. And then you would have to land a spacecraft and melt a channel down through the ice. The ice might be something like a kilometer thick. And then would have to have some sort of submersible vehicle which would explore a wide range around the point of entry to see if there were any life forms, using various techniques to filter out water or to visually see them or whatever. And then if one did discover some very interesting life forms, you would like very much to bring some of them back to Earth for further examination. This, we've looked at this, and this is possible, and it's possible in a relatively short trip on the order of a few years in duration, but only if you use nuclear energy to provide the propulsion to get you there, and then also use nuclear energy to provide the heat to melt a channel down through the ice and to power a small submersible vehicle. We feel that the rewards of being able to do this and possibly discover life under these conditions would be extremely important and provide a major new vision for humanity as to what was possible.
So let's take us through a mission then. We'd launch from Earth using chemical rockets, not nuclear.
Right, and we would achieve a stable high orbit before any effort was made to turn on the nuclear rocket. Once it was turned on, it would provide the push to take us from high Earth orbit to Europa and to capture and land at the Europa, on the Europa ice surface. Once on the surface, we visualize having a couple of very much smaller nuclear reactors, one of which would be attached to a submersible vehicle, which would provide the heat to create a melt channel, which would be about 50 centimeters in diameter. And if you can visualize, it's not like a drill, it's just like a hot rod that sinks down through the ice and then eventually ends up at the liquid ocean, which could be about a kilometer below the surface. It would take about 10 days to do that journey from the surface down to the ocean. And then with a very small steam turbine propulsion unit on the submersible, one would be able to cruise around at a speed of 1 to 2 meters a second, exploring a very large volume of what the ocean would be. Of course, we have no real idea what kind of ocean it would be. There's some evidence that where jets of the ocean have come up to the surface and solidified and evaporated, there are salt deposits, so there's some indication that there is a salty ocean there, but nobody knows how salty. Nobody knows whether the ocean, if it exists, truly exists in a large scale, is is clear or opaque, or it's got a lot of strong currents in it, or it's very still. We just don't know those things. Finding those things out would be just very interesting in itself, but then being able to filter out the water, see if there were any microorganisms in the water, to dive down to the surface, the rocky bed surface of the ocean, and see if there were any hydrothermal vents, which were giving off energy and supporting life colonies like they do on Earth, would also be very interesting. And we could, in principle, capture some of those organisms and then return to the point where we had entered the ice and melt our way back up to the surface and then load them on the spacecraft for return to Earth. As part of this mission, one would, because of the very much high velocity and increments required to first get there and then to come back, one would have to make the return propellant at Europa by melting some ice to make water, then electrolyzing the water in a conventional electrolyzer to get hydrogen, which would then be liquefied for as a propellant for the return journey. But we've looked at this mission in some detail, and we think that it would probably take about 2 years to get to Europa, about a half a year on the surface, and then about 3 years to get back. And it all could be carried out with a rather small launcher of the type that we already use now to launch communication satellites. The one missing thing is the nuclear propulsion engine and a couple of small reactor assemblies, which would basically just heat water. Those reactor assemblies really pose no technical challenge because that kind of work has already been done. The only one that would still require some development would be the nuclear rocket engine. But a lot of work has been done in previous years on these systems. And I think with a program to aimed at developing them, they could be ready to go in maybe 5 to 6 years.
Same as that?
Yes.
You've got your submarine boring down through the ice. There's a lander on the surface. It is a couple of hours, at least, light travel time to get a signal from Earth to the lander to tell it what to do. How that is going to pose some problems, isn't it? How are you going to work around that sort of problem? And once it gets down below the ice, how do you maintain contact with your submarine?
Well, that would have to be worked out in detail, but what we have proposed as a first look at how to do that is that as the submarine would melt its way down through the ice, it would deploy behind it a small diameter fiber optic cable, which would allow it to have continual contact with the lander, which then could relay information back to Earth. And as the submersible reached the bottom of the ice sheet and melted through it, it would still be communicating with that surface lander, but then a small package would detach from the submersible and hang at the end of the fiber optic cable down in the water, and we would call that a communication relay transponder, so that it would emit a periodic pinging sound so that the submersible would know where it was in relationship to that transponder, and so the submersible could cruise around always knowing where it had to come back to get back to the ship. It could also relay information through its own pinging noises to this transponder, which would then relay information back to the ship. You'd always want to be able to do that because you'd, in the event that something happened to the submersible, either an accident or a breakdown in mechanically in it, or more fancifully, if some giant squid grabbed it, it would always be, you would have always had the information that it had gotten up to that point, which would have then gotten back to Earth in real time. But your point is right, is that there is a long delay between Earth and Europa, so that the submersible in large part would have to be autonomous in the sense that it would go as a preset exploration program which had been directed from Earth for a certain period of time, and it would stop and say, here's my information that I've collected, it's all been transmitted back to Earth, I'm waiting further instructions. It would just essentially float there until the next set of instructions came back from Earth, which would take maybe a few hours, and tell it what to do next. And that way, I think you could get a reasonable search, an exploration program, but not in real time. I would say that's essentially a packets of real time type of program.
Getting down through the ice, you're using this heat thing. You could see how gravity, you know, the weight of it, would sort of melt its way down through the ice. But what about getting back up?
There, one thing to remember is that the ice is so cold on Europa, it's minus 200 degrees C, that your melt channel will only be a few meters long at most. Before it refreezes, before the heat goes out of the water into the surrounding ice, and then you've got a channel already frozen. So you can't come back up the same channel, and because that's already been frozen again, and your fiber optic cable will also be frozen in place, the communications cable. When you come back to the point that you, near the point that you entered, what you'll start to do is to direct jets from the front of the submersible as it's starting its ascent back to the surface, which will essentially melt away the ice above it in the channel, and effectively you'll create a pool of water, and the submersible would be made slightly positively buoyant and sort of float slightly above the surface of that pool and keep pumping a little bit of water up above it to melt the channel. So essentially it would create its own pool of water, which would then sort of work its way up through the ice. And again, behind it, a few meters behind it, the pool would already start to refreeze because of the very cold ice that surrounds the pool. But again, in about 10 days, I think it could work its way up through the ice surface to a point near enough to the lander where it could discharge its samples and be ready for the spacecraft to return to Earth. The submersible itself would not be returned to Earth. It would just remain on Europa.
One final concern. You lift off from Europa. You fire back towards Earth using your nuclear rocket. What chance would there be that this would then collide with the Earth if a failure happened en route?
No chance, because what would happen is that you'd give your impulse to get back to Earth, then the nuclear rocket would detach with a small additional impulse that would send it into a trajectory that would miss Earth by many millions of miles. So you've now got the spacecraft traveling back to Earth with a small conventional, very small conventional rocket engine, I suppose, to give you updates on corrections on the trajectory, but that could be a very small conventional engine. And then coming back into Earth, it would use a conventional aeroshell reentry type of system to re-enter Earth and land on Earth. So there would be no nuclear inventory of radioactive material anywhere near Earth.
And what are the prospects of getting the financing to do this and the political permission?
Well, I think right now it's low, because we've committed to a certain number of exploration missions using conventional technology in the next few years, and I think that we will continue with those, and we should. What I'm hoping to do is to point out the benefits that could arise from this and get a program started. Realistically, it probably would take a few years to essentially provide the enough background to people to that they can really appreciate the benefits from this. And also, I think we have to sort of start doing more than just thinking in terms of a fairly limited space exploration effort. I think we have to start thinking that this is an important enough activity for humanity that we really should be doing a lot more and spending more money on it. The amount of money spent on space exploration is, I think somebody said, a small fraction of what Americans spend on pizza. during the year. And so I think as people begin to really get drawn into what's happening in space and get enthusiastic about it, they will support greater efforts, and then they'll decide, well, if we really want to have the best benefit of the money that we're spending, we should develop nuclear systems to help us carry out the missions, particularly to the outer planets.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight on the Space Show, Jim.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Right.